living for Jesus, honoring Him with our lives, and even with our worship today. Be turning, if you will, in your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 3. 2 Corinthians chapter 3. We don't have any letters that were personally written by Jesus Christ to us. We have many epistles which were written by His chosen servants. Of course, ultimately that's just as good, I suppose. We have His message given to us in Scripture. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 37 that if anyone thinks himself to be a prophet or spiritual, let him acknowledge that the things that I write to you are the commandments of the Lord. So when we read what an inspired apostle wrote or an inspired prophet wrote, we have Jesus speaking directly to us and writing us a letter, if you will. Have you ever gotten a letter from an important person? Think about that. Maybe not important to anybody else, but somebody that was important to you. Maybe those of us who were married back when we were in a relationship with the one who would become our husband and wife, and we were separated for a time and sending letters back and forth. I remember when Sandy and I got married, Ronald Reagan was in the White House, and we decided this was such an important event, our wedding was, that we sent him an invitation. And he did not come. But he did send us a card in the mail. And I think we still have that in an album somewhere. You know, that's something you save and you cherish. We got this from Ronald Reagan. He basically said, you know, sorry I can't be there, but well wishes in your marriage and all that sort of thing. So that was really nice. The world has letters from Jesus, but as we sang in the song a moment ago, it doesn't read the letters. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul, in defending his apostleship, basically, says in verse 1, do we begin again to commend ourselves, or do we need, as some others, epistles of commendation to you, or letters of commendation from you? He says, we don't have anything to prove, basically, is what he's saying, as far as being apostles, caring about your souls. But he says to them, he says, you are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read by all men. Clearly, you are an epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but by the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of flesh, that is, of the heart. I want to talk with you this morning about being letters of Christ. Paul says, you Corinthians are letters of Christ. You are epistles written by Christ. You show not only my apostleship, but also Christ written on your hearts. And the world can see Christ in you. You demonstrate my work, really is what he's saying. And we, even today, as we read the letters of these apostles and prophets of Christ and put them into practice in our lives, we too then are epistles of Christ. We are the result of the work of the Apostle Paul and of the Apostle Peter and other inspired men of the New Testament. We are the result of their work. And so we too are epistles of Christ in much the same way that these Corinthians were. What does it mean to be an epistle of Christ? As we said, the world, by and large, isn't going to read these epistles, but they're going to read us. They're going to read us. And what they know of Christ will be what they see in us. Everybody's a letter. People are reading you all the time. Everyone has influence in one way or another. There is really no neutral ground is the kind of influence you are. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 30 that he who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters. Somebody says, well, I'm not really for Jesus, I'm not really against Jesus, and I don't want to make too big a splash in this world or make too big a deal about it. Even those who are trying to be neutral really aren't neutral. They're leading others to be neutral with them. They're influencing them in that way, really. And Jesus says that he who is not with me is against me. So, we're all going to have an influence. We're all going to be an influence. Paul says in Romans 14, no man lives to himself. We must strive to influence others for the better, for the cause of Christ. Of course, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Salt makes a difference in things. It can't help it. And if it doesn't make a difference in things, it's not really salt and it's not really good for anything. You throw it out. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. If you are the light of the world, people are reading you. People are seeing you. You are an influence. Maybe much bigger than you realize. All of us can be influences for Christ. We are all influences, but what kind are we? Christians can be read in many ways. And I want you to think about this with me this morning as we get into the main part of our lesson. If you're an epistle of Christ, how do people read you? How do they ascertain what it is that you're saying to them? Well, first of all, by our speech, by what it is that we actually say. The proper speech for the Christian is revealed in Scripture. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, listen to the words of the Apostle as he describes the kind of speech that someone living for Christ should have. He says, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. No bad language. No corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. But what is good for necessary edification that it may impart grace to the hearers. So the things that Christians say should be for necessary edification. The word necessary, that which is needful, required. Edification is building up, encouraging. For the necessary building up and encouraging of one another. That's what should be coming out of the mouths of Christians. And in speaking those kinds of words, it imparts grace to the hearers. You ever had a conversation with someone, and when you get done with the conversation, you just feel a lot better about yourself, about them, and about the whole world? Christians should be talking like that all the time, that their speech should impart grace to the hearers. In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, the Apostle Paul tells us, especially in reference to our speech with those who are not Christians, he says, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. You need to realize that your speech is having this salting influence. It's having an effect on people. What you say can build them up, can impart the grace of God even to them. Or it can tear them down and have a corrupting influence. The thing about salt is it has preserving qualities, doesn't it? Let no corrupt communication, that which causes rottenness, let none of that proceed out of your mouth. But that which is salty and preserves. Sometimes we can be guilty of careless speech, thoughtless speech. We need to guard our speech very carefully. Some of you may know that when you're talking to your wife, it's important to say things very carefully. And sometimes just because you have a thought, it's not always a good thing to say, especially if it has to do with her skin or something about her looks or something like that. That might be construed as being negative. You just need to watch what it is that you say. Well, generally speaking, that's true in all of our relationships. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 36, I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it. They will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. We're going to be read by our speech. Are people getting the message of Jesus in your speech? That's really the question I want you to ask yourself. Do people know by your speech that you're a representative of Christ and who Christ is and what right is and what wrong is by your speech? And then people read you by your conduct. Actions, it's been said, of course, speak louder than words. We are read concerning our behavior at our place of employment. People know if we're good, honest workers. And that says a lot to them about our faith and who Christ is. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 11, the Apostle Paul says to the Thessalonians that you should aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, to work with your own hands as we commanded you. And listen to this in verse 12, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside. Did you put all that together? He says, work hard, work honest, take care of your business, so that people who are outside of Christ can see that you're doing the right thing. Someone was commenting to me the other day about a couple of our young men who are coaching, doing a little bit of coaching a young ball team, and one of the other mothers of one of the girls that was playing asked, are they Christians? Are they Christians? Because we've had some really good coaches, and it seems like every time I find out about their religion, they wind up being Christians. It speaks, doesn't it? Our conduct, our behavior, the way we act, the way we go about our business. Whether it's at work, coaching a ball team, at school, in our relationships with others. We are read regarding our conduct, our concern for the welfare of others. We're read even by how we spend our leisure time. And we're certainly read by the way we dress. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9, a passage familiar to most all of us, tells us that in like manner, the women should adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair, gold, pearls, or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. There's something that even the world sees as proper for a Christian woman, especially here, to wear. And there are things then that are improper. You know, the Bible, in Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 10, talks about the attire of a harlot. Now, if you're trying to speak for Christ, if you're the epistle of Christ to the world, would you want to be wearing the attire of a harlot? Well, obviously not. A lot of women who claim to be Christians do. And I think they're saying the wrong thing by what they're dressed, by the way they're dressing. That's a good warning for us, I think, men and women, this time of year. The weather's getting warmer. We're trying to stay cool in the hot weather. But still, there's a way that's appropriate for Christians to dress. And we need to seriously take that into consideration, again, especially as the weather warms up. Just because the world is dressing a certain way or wearing certain items of clothing doesn't mean that something that we need to be doing. We're trying to represent Christ to the world. That's our main focus. Seen in our speech, our conduct, and by our interest in spiritual things. We read regarding our interest in spiritual things that if we truly show an interest in spiritual things, people will tell it. People will notice it. And they'll see Christ in us and the importance of spiritual things in the way we speak and talk, act and behave. If we are unconcerned, that speaks volumes as well. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul is telling Timothy a number of things that he needs to do as a child of God in bringing others to Christ. And he says, as he gets kind of the end of that context, 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 15, meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them. So Timothy, here's a bunch of stuff that I want you to do, and I'm not going to go back and talk about all the things Paul said in 1 Timothy to that point, but here are several things that you need to do, and you need to give yourself entirely to doing these things, but I want you to look at the end of that verse. Give yourself entirely to them, 1 Timothy 4:15, that your progress may be evident to all, so that people can read in you how serious you are about spiritual things. If you have a Christian over here and they're not serious about spiritual things in their lives, how can we expect the world to be interested in spiritual things? How can we expect the world to be serious about spiritual things when we're not demonstrating that sort of commitment with our lives? The world is seeing that. The world is reading that in us. Christians are read by speech, by conduct, by their interest or lack thereof in spiritual things. What kind of a letter should we be? One of the things I like when I get a piece of paper written by somebody else, it's always nice to be able to read it. You know, my handwriting is not good. I type a lot of things and print them out on the computer or whatever because I know that my handwriting is not good. And if I put something out for people to read, I want them to be able to read it. Several of you have mentioned, well, Steve, you need to make your PowerPoint projections a little better so people can be able to read them all over the place. And I really want to do that. If you're having trouble reading the PowerPoints, I want you to tell me about that because I'm really working so that you can read what's written up here. It's silly to put out a message that nobody can read. See, what's the point of that? We want to be able to see that message. And so, in your life, you need to be a legible letter. Again, going back to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14. You're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hidden. They don't light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand and it gives light to all the house. You don't put your light under a bushel. You see that you are seen. You make sure that you can be read. You make sure that your message is readable. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. I remember growing up years ago, a lot of churches began to publish bulletins like one we have here. But the abilities to print things were not quite as good back there then. And a lot of churches tried to print their bulletins fairly cheaply as well because of the cost of printing. And so they'd had these mimeograph machines, and I don't know if you remember those. These mimeograph machines, they'd run off the church bulletin. And the type, it would be so blurry that you just almost needed a magnifying glass to read. So, you know, some preacher has written this, spent hours writing this great article about some spiritual truth, and you can barely make it out because the print is so bad. Well, think about your life. Can people read you? Are you clear about where you're standing for Christ? Or is it sort of blurry? Do we have too much of the world mixed up with our life that people really can't tell what we're saying and what we're standing for and what we're trying to convey with our lives? Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. See them clearly. See them evidently. We need to be a legible letter. One that can be read. We need to be a positive letter. One that makes a statement for good and has clearness of meaning. How many times have you read something you didn't really understand because it was poorly worded? The message was not clearly and positively set forth. We need to be positive letters. Look at what Paul says in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 14. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. Make a clear, positive statement as lights in the world. And then we need to be a convincing letter. I've got a lot of books in my library on evidences, as it's called. Evidence for the inspiration of the Bible, evidence for Christ being the Son of God, evidence for God being the creator of the world. Book after book after book. Written on what are called Christian evidences. What's the greatest evidence there is that Christ was raised from the dead? Let me ask you that question. What's the greatest evidence there is? Well, it'd be hard to say what the greatest is. The empty tomb is pretty good evidence. The testimony of a lot of witnesses, reliable witnesses, is pretty good evidence. Anytime you have a lot of people testifying to something that are reliable witnesses, that's pretty good evidence. Let me give you one of the strongest evidences for the resurrection of Christ, though, is the changed life of Saul of Tarsus. You ever think about that? I know you have, many of you. Here's a man who is a persecutor of the church, a hater of Jesus Christ, responsible for dragging out Christians and having them tried and executed, a murderer, an insolent man, as he calls himself, all of these things. And he changes from that to become the great Apostle Paul because he saw Jesus on that road to Damascus. His changed life is evidence as to who Jesus is, the risen Lord, the risen Christ. Now the point here is this. Your life can convince people as to who Jesus is. Your changed life can convince people as to who Jesus is. Not that you're a witness to His resurrection, but that you are a disciple of His, and you are following His teaching in your life. And someone who's lived out in the world and lived a life of sin and changes that life to live a life for Jesus according to His law, His word, and His instruction, and is following in the pathway of Christ as a disciple of Christ, that changed life is a convincing letter. Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, he says, "Wives, be submissive to your own husbands, that if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear." Listen to what Peter's saying. Wives, you do what's right, you follow Jesus, and you'll convince your husband, even though he hasn't read the letter himself, even though he's not into the word himself, he'll see it in you. He'll see it in your conduct. You'll convince him by your life. We need to be a convincing letter. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12, Paul writes to Timothy, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." We need to be an example to one another. A letter that convinces others of the way of the Lord and what is right. And we need to realize that we are likely to be an enduring letter. You know, letters of famous people become part of history and can become collector's items. Some of them are worth quite a bit. If you have a letter written by a president from 150 years ago, probably a very valuable piece. If your life is a letter, and it is, it's read by not only people of this generation, but it'll have an influence, like as not, for generations to come. As I think about my life, and you can think about yours as well, I don't know the names of my great-grandparents, but I know they made a decision to come to America. I know that some of my grandparents made decisions about serving the Lord on both sides of my family. And some of those decisions affect me still. Their lives are still being read. The Bible talks about those who, being dead, yet speak. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4. "By faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. Through it, he being dead still speaks." And think about Mary who anointed Jesus' feet. Remember that story? And Jesus says, "Wherever the gospel is preached, what this woman has done will be spoken of as a memorial for her. Her deeds will be remembered long after she's gone." Our lives may not be as far-reaching as the lives of Abel or Mary, but will certainly affect our immediate generation and have an effect for a while even after that. You are an epistle of Christ. How does your life read? I'm afraid sometimes Christians live lives that make for very poor reading. We're not legible. We're not clear. We're not convincing. We're not enduring. We sang a song a little while ago. Christ has no hands but our hands to do His work today. He has no feet but our feet to lead men to His way. He has no tongue but our tongues to tell men how He died. He has no help but our help to bring them to His side. We are the only Bible the careless world will read. We are the sinner's gospel. We are the scoffer's creed. We are the Lord's last message given in deed and word. What if the type is crooked? What if the print is blurred? How's your letter reading this morning? Is it blurred? Is it crooked? Is it clear? Is it convincing? What's it like? We honor Christ in this world by being His letters, by being His message. And our prayer this morning is that we are in fact living those kinds of lives. But if you're not, why not? Let's honor Christ. Let's be what He's died for us to be in this world. Let's bring men to Him by the way we're living and speaking and acting. If that's not you this morning, make it right with Him. We'd ask you to come while together we stand and while we sing.